3900.
HIV.
Dan Roberts at P.O. Box. Report is free to rebroadcast upon notification. The shortwave report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.
Coming up next, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides, your December 7th Pearl Harbor Day show. Let's hope it's not our Pearl Harbor. And welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris, and that was Born to Love by street performer Tom Shivers, who's occasionally gotten a song played on this show just because. Give me your CD. If you play on the streets, I'm likely to whip out a little song. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM. It's also at www.freakradio.org. And I'm going to have a little two-hour show here in the studio. You can join us by jumping on the phone if you'd like. 427-3772 is the call-in line. Lined up for tonight, kind of catching up on some older interviews, Thanksgiving, and some updates on what's been happening around, for example, most recent repression activities in Scotts Valley. Last night there was a Scotts Valley City Council meeting, which did a first reading and passage, unanimously, I have to sadly tell you, of a camping ordinance, or I should say a no camping on public property ordinance. This in a city that has virtually no shelter for homeless people, in a city with a notorious police force, and in a city which essentially is facing a countywide situation where there's shelter for 5% of the homeless population, freezing temperatures, no protection for people at night, no facilities, and lots of mythology being tossed around. So, we also have in the studio with us some guests, hosts, and who knows what they are, some clown in a jester's hat, another guy reading the New York Times. So we've got a collection of characters here tonight who will give us some occasional commentary and probably some occasional grief on the air. Of course, we're talking about Grinmaster Greg and, of course, the infamous Tenderfoot Tim, both who have to suffer, we'll have to suffer their presence and they'll have to suffer mine, but hopefully we can all suffer together and enjoy it as we go. So I'm going to begin kind of so we can organize the show by picking up on a segment that I introduced, I believe, on Sunday when I have a long show in the morning. For those of you who want to note your calendars, it's 9:30 on Sunday mornings, even earlier sometimes because the showman behind me, my show, comes in right before the wake-up calls. Thomas Levitt, Troublesome Thomas, as I dub him, sometimes plays tapes that I also kind of comment on. And so if you want to tune in early, sometime around 8:30, you sometimes can catch me and Thomas bantering and historically analyzing the grim situation for homeless civil rights in Santa Cruz and reviewing some old tapes. And that goes on until 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. But anyway, last Sunday I began playing a segment of a series of interviews, one of which was with Nena Ruiz and her mother, Julie Costanza. Nena Ruiz and Julie Costanza were the people managing the Lee Apartments in 2000 when they were seized by the Santa Cruz City Council, and they were demolished along with the Dolphin Apartments and the building across the street, which also had apartments, a total of 63 apartments. It was demolished to make room for 48 apartments, admittedly larger and more spacious and more modern, more livable apartments, but ultimately less living space for the people. And essentially, it amounted to the dislocation and driving away of a community of Latinos, though many Latinos who were in the Dolphin and Lee Apartments are also now have moved into the new Nueva Vista. But they were not guaranteed that, and we're going to hear kind of an update on what happened to them from Nena Ruiz, who headed Residentes Unidos, a group of Spanish-speaking residents combined with English-speaking activists in the community who supported them, who essentially forced the city council to force their favored charity, Mercy Housing, which had the monopoly position on this Nueva Vista housing project, to in fact allow people back in, to essentially lower their entrance requirements, to allow the people that they were evicting or that the city council was evicting into the new apartments. And we now join Nena Ruiz and Julie Costanza, who are going to be talking about that. They were actually standing in line waiting for something to eat on Thanksgiving, along with hundreds and hundreds of other people. It's two good meals a year, folks, and it would be nice if Dennis Adams of the Potter's Hand, who will be trying to feed on Sunday initially at the Vets Hall at 10 o'clock in the morning, and then perhaps at San Lorenzo Park will be allowed to feed, both by the Vets Hall's rather yuppified bureaucratic administration, which provoked a protest today by veterans outside the Vets Hall, which we hope to get to later in the show, and by the Parks and Rec Department, which has authority, increasingly arbitrary and authority by fiat, over the city's parks. Zarina Danette Shoemaker heads Parks and Rec, and under her czarinaship, Dennis Adams' feeding of 150 to 200 homeless people was stopped in San Lorenzo Park after it had been going for a couple months. He moved to Grant Avenue Park, where he was told to be okay, and it was stopped there as well by threats from Parks and Rec, demands that he not do it. We're talking about murder or violence, rapes perhaps, or no, not even litter. It's just all those homeless people in one place. It just was quite unsightly. Tim, you got a word to say about that?
I was just going to say that, you know, he's been doing this for a good 5 or 6 years that I know of, not longer. It's not like this is a new program that he just started. It's something that's been going on for a long time, and has had a tremendous impact on a lot of vets that I know. He gives a lot of hope to a lot of people, and I just think that it's sad that they're kicking him out of the Vets Hall, more than sad, after all the work that he's done. You know, he also provides services for homeless people who die when nobody else will.
And by services, you don't mean, I don't know, a special extreme unction or anything like that. You mean rather he provides a funeral service.
A funeral service, right. Yeah. When a homeless person dies in Santa Cruz and nobody claims the body, they are burned, put in a cardboard box, and stuck in a cement room at the back of the cemetery.
Sheltered at last.
Sheltered at last.
And no longer violating the camping ordinance.
No.
Very touching, yes. And that, of course, happens to like 40 or 50 homeless people per year. You'll be able to hear their names read on December 21st at the Homeless Service Center. There will be a lot of pious maneuvering, and there'll be people will have their heads low, and they'll remember these dead people. And then, of course, they'll continue doing what they've always done. I'm thinking of the bureaucrats who run the city. Occasionally, you usually get a city council member coming in there to have a somber look on his face while she or he, of course, moves to support the same camping ordinance that criminalizes people and makes their lifespan much more tenuous because they have to worry about not being able to sleep in a safe group, not being able to sleep in a well-lighted area, not being able to sleep with options to call the police. Those are three things I always mention. And there are probably more, but I can't think of them. Anyway, if you want to call into this show, you're welcome to do so even while tapes are playing. 427-3772 is the phone number, 427-FRSC. In case you want to listen to older shows, they're archived at Huff Santa Cruz, HUFFSantaCruz.org. HuffSantaCruz.org. This show will also be archived there in case you want to check back and review our incredible wisdom that we aren't going to be revealing on the air. I think we may be getting a little music. These two... Tim and Greg are both musicians, good musicians, I might say. Certainly better than I am. Tim, you do, I know, a food program on Monday out there in the freezing cold in front of New Leaf Market. And I know, Greg, you do some musical shenanigans on Wednesday with SAFE, Society of Artistic Freedom and Expression. So good to have you both in the studio. I think only Tim is near a mic. But Greg has a stentorian voice, and I'm sure he will make himself heard.
He can grab the mic.
If he feels the need to do so. Here's a little from... Sorry, Tim.
Oh, I did want to make an announcement that as far as our feeding program, on Monday the 18th, 1 week prior to Christmas, we're going to have a huge meal going on, as well as brand-new socks and blanket giveaway, and hopefully going to be able to get a bunch of musicians to show up, and there's even going to be a merchant down there.
Goodness gracious. Well... Sounds good to me. That's going to be at 6 o'clock. At
6 o'clock in front of New Leaf on Monday the 18th.
And I think Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, there are always events happening down there at night, music and events and food, I guess, Monday and Tuesday. And who knows, maybe even on Wednesday, too, if people start cooking up. I guess on Wednesday there's food with Food Not Bombs at 4 o'clock at the farmer's market. And there's also the much beloved sit-down in church or else don't eat too well Elm Street Mission. That's the place. I know Dennis Adams, the Potter's Hand that we've talked about, evicted from the Veterans Hall. But again, going back there next Sunday at 10 o'clock and sort of beating on the door, so to speak, doesn't require you to hear the word of Jesus or Moses or Muhammad or any of the other uptight patriarchs, but allows, you know, people to actually be fed without that kind of propaganda and religious forced audience. Anyway, let's get back to Dolphin Lee, since I began with that, and I don't want to stray from it too far. Here we are, Nena Ruiz and Julie Costanza talking about what happened to the Latino subsidized housing project in the Beach Flats. What were people able to return? And we'll hear more about that.
Nena Ruiz and Miss Julie Costanza.
And you two, of course, were much involved in the ancient and generally forgotten Dolphin Lee apartment, Nueva Vista Hoo-Ha.
Yes, we were.
I know you. Now you were head of Residentes Unidos, or at least a representative thereof.
Yes, I was.
Have you any idea? There was a concern at that time that Mercy Housing, which built with City Council Redevelopment Agency, the building that replaced the Dolphin and Lee apartments, that the people would not be given guarantees and they'd be displaced. Do you know what happened to folks? Were our concerns as valid as we thought they were at the time, or if things worked out better or worse?
I think that some people got their housing, but most people got, you know,
took the money
and they, you know,
went something with their lives with the money. But had we not done what we did.
And again, what we should say here that took the money. What that means is that the redevelopment agency, Seal Cirillo, offered to buy off some of these people with like $5,000 relocation money. Which sounds like a lot of money, but the reality is, in terms of the cheap housing that the people had at the Dolphin Lee Apartments, it essentially meant they'd have to leave the area once that money was gone. And these people were not guaranteed places back in the new housing. Some of them were, but some of them weren't. And that demand that we made, that be allowed, we actually were able to, we had dozens of Latinos from the housing marching into a SCAN meeting and actually overturning the old membership, old leadership to get them to pass that, enraging old-timers like Bernice Belton and her daughter Nora Hockman, otherwise fine activists, but kind of tied to this project apparently at the hip, joined at the hip to this project and very upset that Residentes Unidos and people inside this project were people who were actually going to be displaced were making a fuss about it. That was what the money situation was, and I don't have any figures on how many people actually returned to the housing, but as Nena now says, the fact that there were any kind of guarantees at all, any kind of lowering of Mercy Housing's options, I should say their entrance requirements, was because of mass pressure by Residentes Unidos, HUF, other organizations, which put a lot of pressure on the new city council, which was a supposedly progressive one elected in 1998 with council members Sugar, Fitzmaurice, and Crone. And then, of course, Catherine Byers, who was then kind of the king queen pin mayor for the first year, and then the aging crone behind the throne, so to speak, in the second year when Keith Sugar was mayor. I say this with some sadness, because Byers was a fine defender of homeless rights when she was not in a real position of power, when she was in the minority on city council in the 90s, and then when she came into power in the late 90s, she simply, like Emily Riley, who took a much more liberal position when she was out of power, she became much more conservative and, in fact, defeated proposals to reform the sleeping ban and to allow people the right to survival camping in at least in some areas. That was defeated by essentially Byers and Fitzmaurice, who jumped ship. Anyway, back to Thanksgiving this year and Nena Ruiz and Julie Costanza.
we'd be saying something different right now. We would be saying we don't know where anyone is.
I mean, if we hadn't put pressure on the management.
Absolutely.
Now, you, of course, were the managers.
I was the one that stopped the sale until we got what we wanted. And because of everything, it got so much publicity that they really couldn't do what they were planning to do, and that was just make you eligible to apply. They were going to guarantee that. Well, anyone can apply. It doesn't mean they're going to be qualified. And most of our people traditionally weren't qualified to move back in, you know, with the regular standards. But
because of various problems they had and because of the high standards of Mercy
House. Children being born here, but the parents not. And documentation and stuff. They were still human beings that lived in our place and were doing just fine before. And I'm happy to say they're doing really well now.
And some of the reasons that there were these concerns that those who were being displaced by the liberal progressive Santa Cruz City Council and the liberal progressive subsidized housing builder Mercy Housing was because I don't know how accurate Nina ultimately was with her claim that if you were if your mom was a citizen, but if the children were citizens but the parents were not, you couldn't move into housing. I think that obstacle may have been overcome, though there was always some question because if federal funding is involved, there is this tight noose drawn in terms of illegal or questionably papered immigrants, even however long they've lived here or worked here, however much a part of the economy and the community they've been. But one of the real problems was that you weren't allowed to have had a felony conviction in the last 5 years, and this would have displaced some of the residents, I think. Not that you had a major bands of criminals, but you had some people who had some criminal records who still need housing. And you also had other concerns, which essentially allowed Mercy Housing to pick and choose the people it wanted. Not that you have the most non-criminal element in places like Neary Lagoon Housing, which was also run by Mercy Housing originally, I believe. Or was it? Do you know anything about that, Tim? Was Mercy, did Mercy run Neary Lagoon or?
Not
sure. Okay, well, let's hear a little more, and who knows? Maybe we can fill in some of the details. Probably arcane and somewhat obscure history for some people, but remember, this was sort of the largest affordable housing project that Santa Cruz has done, I think, in the last decade. I could be wrong about that, but it certainly was a huge project. It tied up all affordable housing money for the next 20 or 30 years, we were told. And, of course, that was one of our objections to it, that the money could have been much more wisely spent on property. There could have been a competitive bidding. But Mercy Housing was imposing its own plan, and Catherine Byers, then mayor, was shoving it through.
People that my son-in-law is one of them, and my grandchildren are living in the new place. And it's good. But I know it's all because of all the stuff we did.
Yeah, but a lot of the men, the single men that were living there, they're not living there. They're cut out. They had to find housing in other places, you know, and they're paying really high rent. And it's a shame because what they were promised, they didn't get. You know, they were promised to get to come back into the complexes, you know, all those promises that they were told that, oh yeah, you're going to get to come back and you guys are going to get to live together and get to be housed together. And that was one thing that was a concern because those men are supporting families in Mexico also. And
which seems to be a big concern of people, human beings are human beings no matter where they're living.
Yeah. And now they got kicked out of their complexes, you know, and they didn't get to go back. So that was a shame because a lot of those people did not get to go back to the complex, you know.
They're living in more, what was the word they called our apartments? Do you remember where pigs live and all that?
Pigsties.
Yeah, do you remember, what was his name?
Mayor Sugar. Mayor Sugar, yeah.
Mr. Sour? Oh, I mean Mr. Sugar, yeah.
He was a sweetie. He commented about packed in like...
Like,
it wasn't pigs. It was packed in like...
Sardines.
Oh, hey, Becky Johnson.
Yeah.
Filthy sardines. I mean, not...
And that we don't do that like they do in Mexico.
Yeah.
In America.
But, yeah.
Well, truly an enlightened mayor, we must say.
Yeah.
And we have an even more enlightened mayor, Mayor Matthews, in power now.
Yeah.
Well, Chris is pretty good. Chris
Crone?
He was pretty good. But he changed a little. He changed a little since back in the day. But I won't forget the support he gave us back then. You got to give credit where credit's due. Yes, Robert?
So what kind of support did Chris Crone actually give Residentes Unidos? I don't remember any great support.
He was for it. I don't know that he did anything phenomenal or like I'm saying, but he was for it. He was one of the few that stayed with it the whole time.
Becky, do you remember Chris Crone's position on Residentes Unidos and what happened with him? We're talking some old-timers about an old issue.
He asked a lot of questions, but I'm not sure that he really came back and said that...
From start to finish, but he wasn't doing anything to promote it. Like, you know, he didn't talk very loud.
He kept a low profile.
He was whispering.
Yeah.
He was whispering, but he stayed with
him. I don't remember.
And that's
what I... Fight! I'll be hiding in the back. That sort of thing.
Something like that.
Even though he was on the city council.
Something like that.
Yeah. We've been talking with
Julie Costanza
and
Nana Ruiz
and
Becky Johnson.
So, Becky, any comments on the current situation with the Nueva Vista project? You know, any new new thoughts or new reports?
The people that live there say it's like living in a prison.
Yeah, they do.
They do.
Even my children say it's like really cheap. Living in the apartments, they were made cheap. Everything, even like the blinds are cheap. It smells like mold inside there. They're really small, and it is. It's like a little mini jail, you know, and that's how they say. The rooms are so small. My son's bedroom is so teeny, you can barely fit the bed in there, and he could barely, like, get off the bed and walk, like, maybe, like, a couple feet and get to the door. And, I mean, that's how small the rooms are. You know, there's, like, one okay-sized bedroom for my daughter, but his bedroom, you could just fit the bed. That's basically how it is. I mean, it's like a little jail. And it's really bad. And they say it was made with cheap material, the way they built it.
I admit, though, that the previous apartments were nothing to shout about.
No, they weren't, but at least...
No, but they were made in what year? Like the 30s or something like that, you know? These are brand new. So
you got to save money, after all. The city needs to be taking care of the right kind of people.
Yeah, and that's where the focus is.
Yeah. But how much money did they have to put into the complex also?
How much money was put into the Dolphin League?
The cost of the project, what was it? $48 million, was it?
We have to remember we're supporting Mercy Charities, not the people.
Well, Mercy Charities is certainly a fine charity to support. What's your problem?
Catholic. What's that? What they represent? The Catholic.
Catholic Healthcare West is another hospital complex. It's also covered by the Sisters of Mercy.
Exactly.
Who's the oversight group? Yeah.
The sistership.
Which, of course, does not allow abortions to be.
Women's choices. They don't support that.
Well, anything happening on the streets you two want to comment? You guys are indoors, I take it.
No? For now. I haven't been from May until August. I was
homeless.
Homeless and living in a little motorhome that I lent to someone, and they knocked the top off of it. So I have a place to stay for another month.
Any hassles from the police?
I was fortunate. They came and searched a couple times because they could. No reason, they didn't find anything, but they did.
How about you, Nana?
I'm homeless currently, and I
need your children.
Yeah, fighting to get my children, and I'm just seeing that it's impossible. There's no help. It's just...
How many children are we talking about?
Two children. And
oldest and youngest, and the new one's 10 months old.
Yeah.
We have to stay somewhere right now because of the situation.
Yeah, and there's just, like, no assistance out there to help me.
me, and it's kind of like, and I'm disabled on
SSI. Tony Madrigal, he's on the city council. Surely he's concerned about...
No concern at all.
Have you talked to him?
Called over there, and no responses at all. No
orale.
Yeah, no callback, nothing. Yeah.
Tony must have been on vacation at the time, perhaps.
Yeah, probably. So, and it's been a month now. Yeah, it's been a month.
Council for...
She's been all of November couch surfing.
So, council member, the city council number is 420-5020 for those who want to give it a call. And don't waste not a dime anymore, two quarters. But if you can get to a free phone, you feel like it, you can leave a message for the Santa Cruz City Council on these issues.
Yep.
Any message to the community folks before we go?
Just that it's really hard out here, and that, you know, how they try and make it be like, oh, you know, the community is going to help you, and that there's all these services and CD.
And that was, of course, Nena Ruiz and Julie Costanza. And I'm wondering, I think, looks like the tape stopped. Do we still have a tape here? Let's check it out.
Steph.
Don't go away, folks. A bit of technical difficulty, but stay with us.
For homeless people and this and that, there's really not, you know, and I really found that out when I became homeless.
Well, problems in the studio. So we're going to have to turn to something else, even though I've been trying to finish this segment of this tape. I don't know for how many shows, but it's been at least... Three, says Tim. It's an important issue for me because housing for several hundred people, millions of dollars was at stake here, and also the whole public process was in question, and it was really important. And it looks like when this...
We have a huge lack of affordable housing in Santa Cruz, and with Santa Cruz the city itself being 95% built out, they can only build up at this point. And it seems like every time they want to build an affordable housing, there's so much objection to it that it either takes years to happen or never happens at all.
So we've got a couple of other items here. I'm still struggling with this particular technical difficulty. Let's see if we've got it resolved. Wouldn't that be nice?
One day to the next. And... this was kind of like a setup, and now I really see and feel for the homeless people more than I ever have, you know.
And as a homeless,
now I think we are, we're on the air here. It's just we're having a problem with this particular bit of equipment. And that happens occasionally. In fact, it happens quite regularly in my show. So, folks, don't be disappointed. Just hang tough. I think what I'm going to do to tide us over is we're actually hoping to get some music from a couple of these performers here. Perhaps what we should do is do a little discussing of the titillate the audience here with some discussion of the Scotts Valley City Council meeting from last night. We actually don't have the tape with me, which I'm going to be playing selections of, or maybe even the whole damn thing on Sunday, in which the five-person Scotts Valley City Council decided to criminalize anyone who provides their own shelter in Scotts Valley without allowing for any kind of understanding of the fact that there is no emergency shelter for 95% of the homeless people in the community, and probably for everybody in Scotts Valley except for those who can get into a church. And I'm not even sure that they have access to a church up there.
Heard of possibly one church, but that was from a citizen and not from... The city council didn't tell us about any shelters there. As far as I understand, there are no shelters in Scotts Valley at all. They pretty much, and in their literature, mention the Santa Cruz City homeless services is where their homeless people should go. And the reasoning for that is because they donate money. And the last check I saw was about 20 grand a year, but I'm going to double-check that fact.
Well, the idea of expanding criminalization of the poor by expanding camping bans while at the same time allowing, with the understanding that 95% of the people are simply being told, you're not going to be allowed to sleep or protect yourself against the elements at night. Essentially, they're saying, get the fuck out of here or else we'll arrest you or hide so deeply we can't find you. And or else, you know, of course, the way it was phrased in Scotts Valley was, you're a bunch of bums if you don't live indoors or use the wonderful camping facilities, of which they kind of acknowledge there are virtually none in the winter. I mean, the state parks up there are closed in the winter. And it's, you know, Scotts Valley is hardly a cheap area, nor is Santa Cruz for that matter. But the reality of it was that, you know, in spite of, we actually had four activists who showed up at the city council meeting up there and discussed the issue, bringing to them and to their police chief, a fellow named Weiss, a younger guy, who was a very congenial fellow, came over and chatted with me, knew me by name, said he'd heard of the Jones decision. For those of you who don't know, that's the decision in L.A. that essentially the L.A.'s made the L.A. city attorney and police chief say, okay, we're going to stop ticketing you and arresting you in the Skid Row area at night, because if we don't, we're going to get our asses sued off. Actually, they're already getting their asses sued off. Now they have to pay through the nose because the Ninth Federal Court had found that that was unconstitutional. Now, the claim that the Scotts Valley law was constitutional, whereas the L.A. law was not, the L.A. law is actually, it is a harsher law, which states you can't sit, lie, or sleep anywhere in the city of Los Angeles on any sidewalk, is more, and the Scotts Valley law in essence said there shall be no camping on public property, but camping is interpreted as sleeping. There's not a clear definition of camping in the ordinance that I saw, although it, you know, it isn't as outrageously definitive as Santa Cruz's sleeping ban, which actually talks specifically about sleeping. But this wasn't, it did not, the city council, the police chief, did not make it clear, and in fact they made no attempt to distinguish between sleeping and camping, although they used the word camping repeatedly, showed photos of dirty campsites and so forth. We're going to be talking about this more on Sunday, and you'll be hearing the actual voices of ignorance, bigotry,
insanity,
and cluelessness, really. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. These are labels you might say I'm throwing around, but they also really, I think, describe the mentality of the comments. Let's not say the individuals, because the individuals may, in fact, I'm sure on some subjects they're very knowledgeable. They regard themselves as very compassionate people. But to increase the criminalization of poor people at a time in the middle of winter is, you might say, strikingly insensitive, or actually just outrightly bigoted and brutal in the kind of weather we have now. And also the irony was that they said this law wouldn't really have much impact anyway. It was like a public relations gesture that the downtown ordinances represented in Santa Cruz when they were passed or strengthened in 2002 and 2003. They weren't really going to change much, but they were going to fluff the merchants and the conservatives. And at least Santa Cruz had the excuse that they did it during an election. This council unanimously won re-election. The two members who ran, and they were they had no opposition. So they can't even claim it's a political gesture. It's just like they're reinforcing their own bigotry. It's a strange situation up in Scotts Valley, which you will hear on Sunday. Go ahead, Tim.
One thing I noticed was that every single, right before they passed the ordinance, every single city council member that spoke on the issue, except for one, specifically said that the ordinance would have no effect on helping homelessness or even curbing the problem that they were having, and that it was simply a infraction, which is a $90 ticket, as I understand, and a $90 ticket to a homeless person is like $1 million to some people.
Well, it's not just that it's a $90 ticket. It means you can't do it. I mean, if you do, if you, and often in these codes, and I haven't checked the Scotts Valley code, but it's true in the Santa Cruz code. If you do an infraction twice,
it becomes
if you in most codes, if you do two infractions, in Santa Cruz it used to be two cases of camping become a misdemeanor if done within 24 hours.
Right.
I mean, that's still the case, actually.
Yeah, but this was their reasoning. And what I found ironic was that almost every single council member stated that this ordinance would really have no effect on helping their problem or curbing homelessness, but that there was a stepping stone that they felt they needed to take.
You know, it seemed like what they were trying to do, what they wanted to have something to meet about, something to shout about, and they were also kind of responding to the police department. Police department and they presented a series of slides similar to those shown by John Wallace in the Parks and Rec Department in April of messy campsites, but most of those campsites, they acknowledged, were on private property and would not be impacted by the Scotts Valley no camping on public property law. Currently, Scotts Valley makes it illegal to camp on
parks.
And, of course, you know, they didn't present a mass of figures that said we have had, you know, thousands of campers or dozens of campers. They had five or six campers in there, at least in the police report, they said. And then they cited 75 to 100 incidents involving littering, loitering, alcoholic beverages, environmental pollution of streams. But they didn't, I don't think it was clear, and we'll have to hear Police Chief Wise's presentation on Sunday, that this had to do with 75 specific camping incidents in the last year. I think, or maybe it was even the last 2 years, but it was last year or two. So they didn't have any it's like having no problem. It's like the way with street performers, Santa Cruz authorities destroyed and threw out the 22-year-old street performers' voluntary guidelines in favor of Ed Porter and Emily Riley's move along every hour or you get a $90 citation, do it twice within 6 months, and you get a jail sentence and a $1,000 fine up to 6 months in jail, at least in terms of the wording of the law.
Right.
You know, so there was no, you might say, there was no real problem. And then finally, I pointed out to the police chief and to Paul Maraganda, who's formerly mayor of Scotts Valley, now still on the city council, who, to my mind, is a really kind of a vicious DA who masquerades as a sort of genial, thoughtful fellow, who prosecuted people for serving free food back in the day. He prosecuted me, I believe, and others in the early 90s. Not successfully, mind you, but he tried, you know. And he now does drug war prosecutions for Bob Lee in the courts. He also sits on the Scotts Valley Board. He knows that 647J, I assume he knows this. I mean, he's a prosecutor. Maybe he doesn't know it, but he can easily find it out, and I pointed it out to him. The state code 647J, which bans lodging, illegal lodging, it is a vicious law, and it's used in San Diego, San Francisco, and Sacramento to criminalize homeless people. It's a statewide sleeping ban, and it's used that way. I was arrested under it in 2003 in Sacramento, taken to the Sacramento jail, an experience I do not recommend to anyone.
Go to Sacramento jail.
No, a very bad place. You know, but the fact is, the code exists, it's used. It's going to be declared unconstitutional, along with the Scotts Valley law, if the standard of the Ninth Federal Court of Appeals is upheld. You know, but there is a code in existence that does exactly what the Capitola law does, and the only difference is it's a misdemeanor, and of course that means a higher penalty for the person who's convicted, but also you get more squeezing room on the person, and that's what happened to Jesus Santos, who was for 6 months kept to keep going back to court. He was camping in the Poganip this last winter, a year ago, and he was taken to court for the 647J, and they got him to plead guilty because they scared him to death. And that's probably what they do with the campers who are, you know, up there. If they use 647J, if they really had an intractable case of somebody that, you know, but it's hard to imagine anybody being in a position where that's a problem unless there would be other laws that you would deal with. They kept saying, well, you can't use the littering law because you don't see them littering. And you can't use, you know, you're polluting the stream because, oh, no, that's my buddy's campsite. I'm just visiting here. And there are various dodges that are used.
Such crap.
Well, it's not entirely. I mean, these laws are designed to give the police the tools to, you know, it's just like the parking garage paranoia law in Santa Cruz, the law that makes it illegal to be in a parking garage at all unless you have
minutes,
a bicycle, or 15 minutes if you have a car or bicycle, and then get out. Even if
30 minutes if you're disabled.
And 30 minutes. You get a special 30-minute privilege to be in your car in a parking garage in Santa Cruz if you're disabled. That's the public parking garages. These are designed to give the police the tools to frighten, to terrorize people. In fact, they encourage people to terrorize themselves. That's the kind of national security, local security mentality that we're dealing with here. And you see it most vividly when it's applied to poor and homeless people, because they don't have lobbies to defend them. They can't defend themselves. They'd rather keep a low profile. They don't have any money to hire a lawyer. And like that. You have some thoughts there, Tim?
The whole process up there was disturbing to me. But, you know, Scotts Valley, for one, they don't have a huge homeless problem. You know, when you go to Scotts Valley, it's not like being in Santa Cruz where the homeless, you know, you see them, they're out. Scotts Valley may have some homeless people camping there, but it's not like it's a huge problem that they needed to pass a new law to deal with. They have laws on the books that they could use to deal with everything they showed me on those slides, as far as I'm concerned. One of the funniest, most insane comments I heard from one of the council members was, and he was serious, was that he thought that the private landowners that were having problems with people camping on their land should consider clear cutting. Of course, he's talking about an area that's full of redwoods.
Right. Well, maybe get some kind of coalition with environmental activists. I wanted to say at this point, though I haven't really drawn it up on the screen yet, that there is a whole weekend of Green Scare defense activities happening, which Green Scare and probably other broadcasters on this station have mentioned it. And you can go to...
It's a flyer right above you, too.
Thank you. Yeah, it's called... It's the attempt to overcharge, jail, and terrorize environmental activists. And there's a whole weekend of discussion coming up on this. There's workshops on Saturday, December 9th, a radical picnic and workshops at 315 Walnut Street at 2 p.m. at the Beehive House. There's 7 p.m. dinner. It looks like that's also on Saturday night. There's a tomorrow night on Friday, the December 8th. There's guest speakers David Hayden and Benjamin Rosenfeld. Hayden is a local grand jury resister and volunteer for No Compromise magazine. Benjamin Rosenfeld's a Bay Area attorney specializing in civil liberties. I'm reading from the flyer. Activist defense and grand jury resistance, who has successfully argued on high-profile cases such as FBI versus Judy Berry. There will be vegan refreshments, relevant books, zines, and T-shirts will be available, and also being sold to raise benefit money. And there will be film screenings of Eco Dissent, Not Terrorism, A Voice for Liberation, Rod Coronado, a short moving interview with Rod Coronado, Native American, tireless defender of the earth, and convicted Animal Liberation Front activist, and then refusing to be silent, Josh Harper, one of the Shack 7 defendants, speaks rightly about the forthrightly about the Shack trial. Shack is... I'm looking for where... it's obviously an environmental group. Could it be the group... I think they're accused of burning SUVs. And
yeah, I think that's the group that was accused of burning SUVs on a lot where there were no people. It was not similar to the other event where people were keying cars and apartment complexes and stuff, or I should just say SUVs. It was in a private lot where they sell SUVs.
It's the Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty Shack Group. Here's on their website, greenscare.org, they write, on March 2nd, 2006, six animal welfare advocates associated with the group Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty were convicted in federal court of conspiring to cause financial damages to an animal testing company. The defendants were commonly known as the Shack 7 before the government dropped charges against one of their co-defendants, now the Shack 6. The company, Huntington Life Sciences, performs vivisection experiments on about 75,000 beagle puppies, rabbits, mice, and other animals each year, and kills 500 animals a day. The defense was not allowed to present any evidence that related to the cruelty of vivisection or reflected on the virtues of the Shack protests. The crux of the government's case was that Shack used its website, which was taken offline following the verdict, to encourage others to commit crimes against HLS and its supporters. The group's campaign to get HLS to stop testing on animals or close down has had a large degree of success. Dozens of large companies, including the Bank of New York, Stevens Inc., and Marsh Inc., have pledged in writing to never have anything to do with HLS again. On September 12th, after a tirade of inflammatory rhetoric by the prosecution, impassioned speeches by the defense, and commentary by the court handed down the following sentences for Kevin Kujanas, 72 months, for Laureen Gazzola, 54 months, for Jacob Conroy, 48 months. One day later, Joshua Harper was sentenced to 36 months, and a week later, Andrew Stepien received a 36-month sentence. They aren't accused of, of any kind of property damage. They are accused of maintaining a website and talking about the issue and encouraging people to protest vivisection. And they ordered the defendants to pay $1 million in restitution. And you can read about this at greenscare.org, or you can go check out 7 p.m. Friday, December 8th. Go to the Resource Center for Nonviolence at 515 Broadway. And the cost is...
$9 to $30 sliding scale.
$9 to $30 sliding scale. Thank you.
Five to $30
sliding.
No one turned away due to lack of funds.
No one turned away. So don't burn down the building. Go in and check it out. And you can even talk about it on your website, but watch out. Someone may be reading
it. Looks like
you.
All funds will be for legal defense of the accused activists.
So another article that caught my attention, which I haven't been able to do much research on, but was interesting, was in today's Good Times. And you brought this to my attention, Tim. It's an article in the...
Since we both may have pending warrants.
quite possibly. If you have, it's called The Ticker, and it's headed Rescinded This, and it's about the fact that FTA's failures to appear and warrants are going to be treated civilly rather than criminally. So actually, the order, the standing order 624 by Santa Cruz Superior Court Judge Heather D. Morse, we used to call her Mockingbird Morse because... she had such a sort of a charming attitude, a great smile in court. She was the original smiley Emily Riley. I mean, she had a big grin.
It sounds all wonderful till you finish the article. There is some bad sides.
Let me read what it says.
This, yeah.
It declares it's effective November 14th, and so it's already effective. All traffic and minor violation infractions, that's like camping tickets, folks, which have resulted in the issuance of a bench warrant are ordered, recalled, and returned to the court effective immediately. Effective immediately, all traffic and minor violation infractions which have resulted in failure to appear or failure to pay will be processed by civil assessment. The order cancels around 4,000 existing bench warrants. So it's not, I'm not entirely clear what this means. First glance, the wholesale invalidation, I'm reading again from the Good Times, of that many criminal infractions might seem like an actual example of judicial activism, but the motivation actually came from the state legislature, which passed SB 940 in September 2003. The bill clarified and strengthened the court's ability to use civil assessments to monetarily charge persons for their mistakes. The dismissal of the bench warrants acts in tandem with assigning those cases civil assessments, which are then sent to a collection agency. And actually, we had a person who I interviewed, night roamer Nick, who is selling street spirits on the street. You might find him. New Street Spirits should be coming to Santa Cruz in a day or two, the December issue. That's the homeless publication that's sold by homeless people. He himself talked about getting a failure to appear fine assessment from a San Diego collection agency dated 2000, or rather from a ticket way back in 2000.
I got a call today on my ticket from a collection agency. It's on my machine. I'm not sure from what county it came from. But as you know, I have a ticket that's outstanding. I haven't been able to appear because it's 7 in the morning and I've got some disabilities. And it's extremely difficult for me to get down there at 7 a.m. It's at now $400 and I got pulled over and nothing happened. I was surprised. Now I know why. And today I got a call from a collection agency winning their $400.
Well, it's interesting because since sleeping and camping ban tickets are infractions that would fall under this category, it might be perfectly possible to ignore
a sleeping ban.
Just say, I'll pay a fine, and then just ignore it and have it go to a collection agency. And then
have
they
them hunt you down.
And they can beat the bushes. They can have collection agents. Maybe, you know,
guys
Halliburton can run around in the streets with security, you know, independently of the police force looking to, you know, to catch these homeless scofflaws who won't pay off their, you know, fines
they,
for sleeping.
They can attach their food stamps.
And their sleeping bags, you know, and then their toothbrushes and their backpacks, you know, to make sure that all gets paid to the proper place. This actually... Again, I'm not sure that this whether we're giving you an accurate sense of the implications of this. It may be
not that easy.
It may not be that easy. The dismissal of the bench warrants acts in tandem. Let's see. We've had limited success in issuing bench warrants for these kinds of minor violations, says Alex Calvo, the court's executive officer. That's the guy who I just can't get a hold of for love or money, who. It was holding up on sleeping ban ticket records for 2 years. I'd say the courts were, and we requested of him and got nowhere, and we requested information about why were people being charged with failure to appear and not begin the right to a jury trial. They kind of created a strange new crime called failure to appear infraction, which doesn't appear in the state code. And why this is important is if you have a misdemeanor charge, you have a right to a jury trial and a public defender. And my advice to homeless people being faced with camping ban tickets, if they're also charged with a failure to appear, because like you, Tim, they don't happen to make it down at the right day, at the right time, then they can say, okay, good, let's have a trial on this. And we'll impanel a jury at a cost of $5,000 or $10,000, and you can decide on this whole issue, and they'll drop the charge. But because referee Basket, who hears all these infraction tickets in the basement of department of the county building, does not advise people of this, and because they've created this new illegal law, or should we say mock law, which claims that there's an infraction offense for a failure to appear, at least they were using it last year. This year it's not quite clear what they're doing. We're hoping for a report from you when you go visit that infraction court there, Tim. It's a way of stripping people of their rights while pretending that you're helping them out. You say, we won't make you go to a failure to appear court proceeding. We'll just add an additional fine. What they're not telling you is that they wouldn't make you do it anyway because it would cost them too much, and you wouldn't have to pay that in the first place if you demanded the right to a jury trial. Nor should the courts be in the business of the cruel and unusual punishment of harassing people for sleeping and camping when there is no legal place to sleep, as the hopefully Ninth Circuit Court will tell the city of Santa Cruz if and when we ever get the legal muscle to push this lawsuit. And I also have an update on that lawsuit, which we've had some good news on that. Man, do you want to talk about that, Tim?
No, go for it.
Well, for a long time, we wanted to find out how many camping tickets are being issued each month, and more than that, because actually the city council since 1999 and the mass protests that many of us mounted in the late 90s, they actually gave the order to the police department, the city council then, to start giving a monthly record of how many shelter spaces were used and how many camping tickets were issued, although I think that comes from the police department, not Parks and Rec, so we don't get the entire story.
Yeah,
we're
missing the
that.
Parks and Rec.
Right, John
records.
Wallace could be very active with his ticket book, Ranger Wallace, as he's known. But the problem we've had, and we wanted to find out what happens to a person who's arrested for sleeping, or how many people actually get arrested for sleeping, how many of these go to failure to appear warrants, how many people actually move their case out of the court of Kim Basket, as I suggest, up to a higher court where they're likely to get slightly better treatment. Slightly is perhaps the appropriate word, but still true. How many people, what are they charged in terms of a fine? How many people appeal these citations? How many of these citations result in jail? When we ask this question, I've asked it for the last 3 years, two at least, for the courts. They gave us various answers. Oh, we can give you this information, but it's going to cost you $70. And I said, okay, even though it should be public information, I should be able to look it up. And then, oh, no, our computers can't handle it. And then the latest dodge was, we can only do it if you get the names of every individual, because we can't look under a code section and see how many tickets there are. Now, I don't think they're lying, although I wonder, frankly. But, you know, it seems very peculiar. So what we had to do is go to the police department and get the names of every person who'd gotten a camping ticket. And I was showing this to you.
There it is.
This thing?
No. And we got the runaround there too from the police department, which initially claimed that they had no such
data.
You know, apparently it's disappeared from the studio. I'm very suspicious as to who might have taken it. Actually, it's around here somewhere. We did get it, and we made copies of it at the last Huff meeting. And the information involves 164 tickets since April 1st of this year, and most important, the names of every individual who's gotten a ticket. Now, when we initially made a Public Records Act request was made to the police department way back in March by human rights organizer Bob Patton, and they told him they had no such information. It was made again by attorney Kate Wells on November 20th. She was told they had no such information. I called them 4 days ago, and I made a phone request saying, you know, I'd like to get copies of the names of people with the camping tickets in the last month. And I talked to Tricia Houston, I think her name is, who's the police records manager. I might have her last name wrong. And she said to me, well, we have that information, but I'd have to check with the city attorney, because we'd have to redact the names. We'd have to strike out all the names, of course, which would defeat the whole purpose of what I was doing. And I said, oh, you have the information? She said, oh, yes, we do. And I said, okay, well, how come you're not presenting it to Kate Wells in her most recent Public Records Act request? And she said, oh, Kate Wells wasn't asking for that information, she said.
So she knew about it.
She did know about it. And I said, I beg your pardon, I helped her write it up. I know she asked for that information. And she said, no, I can assure you she didn't ask that information. I said, I'll have her call you, which is an ordeal in itself, because Kate is super busy. She has family problems.
She's out of town right now.
And she's also out of town. But we got Kate to call up Tricia and confirm that. Tricia then found that there was a computer glitch that had not allowed them, apparently for 9 months, to access these names. But suddenly, the next day, those names were available. I don't know whether that's the power of the attorney or the power of the attorney and activists working together, or the power of getting cranky on the phone, demanding, not just requesting, but demanding public records that the public are entitled to. And so we now have 164 citations with the names of the individuals involved, the names of the officers involved, the date of the incident. And we can then take those names back to the court and get a copy of the disposition of each case and find out what's going on there. We then will forward that information to attorneys in Washington who have said they are interested in pushing for a legal case that will hopefully spell the end of the current Santa Cruz sleeping and camping ordinances as there are now written.
Looks like Bob's also going to make another records request act to see what other charges may have been given at the same time that they were given the sleeping van ticket. You know, whether they were given an open container ticket at the same time, or urinating in public, or, you know, what have you.
Right. In order to see if officers are, you know, targeting particular individuals, or using what's called overcharging, which is being done on the Green Scare case we mentioned earlier. Actually, not the Shack 6, but another case involving, I guess, multiple life sentences for the people who burned the SUVs, even though no people were injured, no people were likely to be injured. The Oklahoma bomber gets off after 10 years, having killed 154 people, or been an accessory to that, although one of them was, you know, executed. Others were not. And these people get, you know, multiple life sentences. And so that's going to be coming up. I don't know, regarding getting back to the Good Times article, whether the new status of failures to appear as a civil assessment rather than a criminal assessment will result in, it sounds like it may result in homeless people being able to say, you know, fuck this, and just continue living their lives. But the police department, and there's sort of an additional indication because Zach Friend, who is the friendly police department spokesperson and one of the undercover agents who infiltrated the last night DIY political organizing last year, which is organizing again this year, by the way. If you want to be a part of that whole process, get in touch with Rico Thunder or jump online and, you know, Google for DIY last night, and you can join the celebration coming up on December 31st, and it's looks like it's going to be fun. But Zach Friend writes he's quoted in the Good Times as saying that this is a decision with significant ramifications, says SCPD spokesman Zach Friend. It might send the message that these kinds of infractions, sleeping ban, camping ban, dog on the mall, sitting within 10 feet or within 14 feet of a building,
urinating because
all the toilets are closed. You know, that they might have no criminal consequences other than, of course, being cited, arrested, dragged into court. And then once you get there, you know, you say, okay, I plead guilty to being human and having natural human functions. Next case, thank you. You know, but of course, I think it's too early to celebrate, but it's an interesting possibility, and I'm going to be keeping my eye on it. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. In the studio with me, I have co-host Tim Rumford, Tenderfoot Tim, as I dub him, and in the corner reading the New York Times or some other paper is, of course, interloper Grinmaster Greg, who's, I don't know what he's up to, but he makes the occasional comment and demand for attention. But, you know, we humor him. Anyway, I wonder if this tape recorder connection is actually working yet. I'm going to try it one more time and see what I get. Are you able to turn
one day to the next? And
it's back. So I'm going to finish this tape that I began about 20 minutes ago. Again, this is the discussion by Nena Ruiz and Julie Costanza, who owned or managed, I should say, the Lee complex that was destroyed by the city in order to put in the Nueva Vista subsidized housing, and in so doing dispersed a lot of a Latino community.
And the way I became homeless was kind of like a setup. And now I really see and feel for the homeless people more than I ever have, you know.
And as a homeless mom of this homeless woman, or what do you think?
And for myself, I have an invisible disease. I have a bone disease. So I'm not acknowledged in that fashion. And I can't get into anywhere because of that. I'm working, trying to get my Social Security, which will help me because I have no income. But trying to get anywhere with no income and disabled and not 55 years old is a really tough situation, too.
How old are you?
I'm 46.
And you are?
30.
Eligible and attractive, we might add. So, America, watch out.
Watch out, Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz.
The whole county, by the way.
And single.
There you have it. Dating service. Give a call to 423-HUB. Looks like you're at the head of the line, Becky Johnson. Any comments about the homeless scene this year?
Well, it looks like there are more people here than last year, which in my mind indicates that there are more homeless people on the streets this year. I don't know if that's true. I'll have to. I always check with the guy inside and this clicker and find out how many people they feed each year. But it's been dropping each year, but I think it might be going up again. That's my guess.
Well, thank you. Anything else?
Oh, I've talked to a number of people here. There's one gentleman who just got into housing yesterday. After 4 years of being homeless, he's been disabled and applying for Social Security benefits, and they finally came through after the government fighting crook every way to try to not pay benefits to him. So that's one example. There's another homeless vet here who's disabled, and he's on the streets. I don't know why there aren't services for him. a lot of homeless people in this line right now.
We have a new city council coming in. Any comments on that?
Well, I don't have a whole lot of hope for them. The only new face is Lynn Robinson, and I think she's pretty solidly in the boardwalk's pocket. You know, whatever Charles Canfield wants done on the council is probably what she's going to do. That doesn't give a lot of hope for the rest of us, I don't think.
Thank you, Becky, and that's all I got. Anything else?
No, that's it.
That's it. In Sacramento recently, after 4 years in housing here at Santa Cruz, but you say that Sacramento has a sleeping ban.
Yeah, it's illegal to sleep on the streets. It's illegal to sleep in your vehicle. You'll get a ticket for camping out.
You've been ticketed yourself?
No, I've been lucky, though, because I've been warned quite a few times, and I just never stay in the same place at the same time. You know, they come through and periodically, and you just have to kind of stay away from them or, you know when to move before you actually get ticketed.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Talking with
Sheree Peterson. Stop the war now.
Here. Anything about the homeless situation in Santa Cruz, civil rights for poor people? Anything come to mind?
I think there should be no homeless in America, the land of the most. We're supposed to have the most resources, so to sending it overseas, we ought to keep it here, and we would have no homeless people, and we ought to all have rights instead of just people in Washington.
Now, are you homeless yourself?
I just got off the streets 2 months ago, praise God. And I'm thankful for that on Thanksgiving.
And how long before that were you on the streets?
Way too long. Too long to count.
And any hassles from police while you were there?
Oh, yeah. I got a lot of parking tickets, a lot of camping. It's illegal to camp. I made A's in college the entire time I was going to school. I was homeless, but I told the mayor and the city council, any of you are just an accident away or losing your job away from being homeless.
And their response?
They didn't seem to care because they, you know, never been homeless. And I think anyone could go insane or become depressed or, like, become lethargic over lack of sleep or worrying about sleeping. And so I applaud you for always having your sleeping ban at the City Hall.
Here. Sooner the better. We've been talking with
Sheree Peterson.
Thank you, Sheree.
Stop the war. Stop the war now.
Here. So we're talking to a poet who just won the Poetry Slam. Your name, poet?
Shannon.
And you have that a brief selection from the poem that won you the slam.
And then I drink like a gallon of water.
She's remembering, folks.
Well, I did fishies, and it's kind of a long one. I decided I had been alone quite long enough, and I had heard plenty about how many fishies there were in the sea. So I decided I was going to catch a fishy just for me. I got me a fishing pole, and I took my boat across the ocean to my favorite fishing hole, where they serve the beer cold and play the music loud and how.
Sounds good to me. How can people hear the rest of this poem?
I'll be doing slams around. I'm going to Oakland first Thursday.
Thank you. We're talking with
Russ Lake.
Hey, Russ.
Just nice to see everyone down here celebrating the good things in life for everyone concerned, all the people helping and taking part.
Are you homeless yourself?
No. That was a moment, thank gosh.
Just cowing down.
I just decided to hang with the folks.
All right. Well, anything you've observed in the last year you want to pass on about civil rights treatment of homeless people?
Yeah, we sure need a lot of help. I mean, a lot of people out there, you know, need help. And there's a lot of people here trying, and just hopefully it'll all come together one of these days.
Thank you, Russ.
Thank you.
talking to the stone master. Give us an alias, please.
Hi, I'm X-City, and I just got seven people stoned.
Stoned on marijuana?
Marijuana.
Now, did you check their cards to make sure that they are medical marijuana patients?
Of course I did.
We know that's the lowest priority. Ah, but since you're in public, I'm afraid I have to deputize this man to arrest you.
Uh-oh.
Take him into custody.
Absolutely.
No, sir.
He's got his hands behind his back.
Don't resist.
All right, very good.
Resisting is futile, sir.
I don't see much smoking in line, either of marijuana or of tobacco. I mean, you know, I see a pipe being surreptitiously passed about, folks. Pretty questionable behavior. But generally speaking, are people smoking less tobacco in the homeless world these days?
I don't know. I think it's a 50-50 thing, man. You know, you smoke some weed sometimes, man. You sometimes smoke tobacco. When you're not smoking weed, you smoke tobacco.
We've been talking with
Calvin T.
Hey, Calvin T. Any comments about police treatment on the street of impoverished marijuana smokers?
Oh, I think they're absolutely wonderful here. We love Santa Cruz police.
Well, there's no particular problem? You haven't been hassled?
Oh, absolutely not. You can sleep anywhere in Santa Cruz.
There you are. A man who's giving his thumbs up to the Santa Cruz Police Department. We're taking him away to the Looney Farm a little later today. Thank you. Anything else?
No, I think that'll be it, man. I'm stoned.
All right, then. We're talking with
Isaac Collins.
And I see you're having a munchy cheese fix. Did you just come from the infamous Veterans Hall where there was a meal today?
Actually, I haven't got in yet because there's been a long line, so I've been sitting out here waiting until the line drags down a little bit to eat a meal.
There's probably some food left inside, although we are moving on. It's about 2:30. Are you homeless?
Technically, I just got in from Africa a week ago, so I'm technically am homeless right now because I don't know no one else out here, but I actually been looking for work and trying to make myself unhomeless.
Now, where in Africa do you hail from?
Ethiopia.
Really?
I went there for like a trip. I went out there to study English and teach kids about English and about how the U.S. culture is.
And how did that go?
It went pretty well. It was a little tough, but I stuck in there and it showed good progress. It showed me a lot about how the culture is, how the property is down there, and how when people get opportunities, they take it.
Now, what part of Ethiopia were you in?
I was on the north side of Africa, like 2 miles out of the airport.
Uh-huh.
I forget the tribe's name. It's like some Niagara or something like that. But anyways, when I was there, I did a lot of studying with the tribes. Like I went there speaking just purely English, and all I wanted to do was just learn the culture.
And now, how do you say good morning in your native language?
Do not know. Didn't learn that.
Well, anything you want to say about Santa Cruz?
Santa Cruz is a beautiful place. You know, it has this beautiful vibe to it, and people should learn more. People should learn how to more connect and have a more open as a community thing, so people will not have to sleep on the streets. There could be a community housing thing, so people could be more gathered in peace.
Have you been hassled for sleeping outside?
Actually, no, because I've been really respectful about it.
You mean you kept a low profile?
I kept a low profile, and like I make sure to choose a spot to sleep wisely.
We've been talking with
Isaac Collins.
Thanks, Isaac.
You're welcome.
96.1 is Brian back here, a.k.a. Keyos, man. I am unknown. Back on the microphone with Robert North. This is the one dime. Real time on the drum line. If you go Pacific Ass Fire. Early in the day, we all get Thanksgiving this way. How you been, brother?
We have two individuals drumming away in front of beautiful borders, illegally on a public bench, but nonetheless, rhythmically, illegal, but...
When was this illegal? On a holiday.
No, a holiday is legal. It's only illegal, of course, if the police tell you about it, but it's public property. You're not allowed to use public property unless you are seated on the sidewalk.
You
don't need a permit. No, you don't need a permit, but...
We are sitting on the sidewalk.
You are sitting on a bench that is sitting on the sidewalk. Yes, but no, you must sit directly. You see, it's an attempt to help people who are poor to exercise their sphincter muscles.
Sphincter muscles, right.
And that's actually true. It is a crime to perform while sitting on a public bench. It's a crime to distribute literature while sitting on a public bench. It's a crime to Well, you can actually play an instrument anywhere on Pacific Avenue, provided you don't have a display device, which could be anything ranging from a table to a cap that you have on the street to collect coins, or a guitar case. If you don't have a display device out there, you can play anywhere you want, actually. I mean, on any public property you want, assuming you're not engaging in unreasonable noise, which is another issue. Usually the standards, the bar is pretty high on that, so you're actually in pretty good shape prior to 10 o'clock at night, though. Hosts and police will attempt to intimidate you by saying that, you know, if they get a complaint or if they decide perhaps for their own purposes that they don't want you to play there, they can come up and say, this is unreasonable noise. And, of course, most people will say, either I'll quiet down or I'll go away, or please don't hurt me, you know, don't, and that sort of thing. In fact, however, the standard is pretty high for unreasonable noise. I did a little workshop on that issue. Which I think you, Grandmaster Greg, attended. And we did some role-playing at that workshop where we tried to get some sense of how do you deal with police officers who come up to you and try to persuade you to take your instrument and move away because, let's say, a merchant doesn't like it or a resident doesn't like it. I'm not saying that residents and merchants don't have a right to, you know, the peaceful use of their property, and, you know, but there's also, we're talking about a somewhat mixed-use public space downtown. And the definition for unreasonable noise is as follows. No person shall make, cause, suffer, or permit to be made any noises or sounds, A, which are unreasonably disturbing or physically annoying to people of ordinary sensitiveness, or which are so harsh or so prolonged or unnatural or unusual in their use, time, or place as to cause physical discomfort to any person. And so it's one of those two. It also has to be such that which are not necessary in connection with an activity which is otherwise lawfully conducted. So what that means is if you're engaging in playing the guitar on the streets with a lawful activity, it really doesn't matter if a person is... Even if of ordinary sensitivity is offended, if it's lawfully conducted, you're okay, because it says both these conditions have to be met. It has to be both unreasonably disturbing or physically annoying to persons of ordinary sensitiveness, or so harsh or prolonged as to be unusual or unnatural. Unusual, unnatural, or in their use or time or place, such as to cause physical discomfort.
It's got to be
unusual, unnatural, and cause physical discomfort, or it has to be unreasonably disturbing or physically annoying to people of ordinary sensitiveness. So it can be one or the other, but it also has to be such as is not necessary to a lawful activity. So, for example, a garbage truck making a lot of noise does cause maybe people of ordinary sensitivity, is harsh or prolonged, may cause even physical concern, or a loud jackhammer, but that's considered perfectly legal prior to 10 o'clock at night. So if that's legal, then even Greg's guitar playing would have to be considered, much as we'd hate to say it, legal.
Legal.
Yes, legal. So, anyway, so that's what I was...
Personally, I find the piped music at the bus station physically disturbing and unnatural.
You know, that's interesting. I got...
Bring that up,
actually. You know, actually, if Greg gets near a mic, perhaps he can actually be heard instead of having to shout from across the room.
Can you hear me like this?
Well, probably some people can, but others probably can't. But anyway, I know, Greg, that you alerted us to the fact that at the Metro you heard a bunch of officials scheming on how to set up some anti-homeless architecture, whether it was a change machine or changing the way that the face of the Metro Transit Center faces Pacific Avenue. Do you have any more details on that?
I just noticed that there's a lot of blasting classical music. Not picking up? This fucked up studio.
Yeah, I noticed that there's a blasting classical music now.
Well, there certainly
outside
is.
Outside the Metro.
It's interesting.
I wondered if that was just to drive away the youth that congregate out there.
Actually, we're thinking of calling in people from other cities for classical music lessons. And that was, I think, used successfully at 7-Elevens like 10 years ago. But It shows how, you know, either desperate or clueless, the redevelopment agency, I think that's where this comes from, or that maybe it's the transit authority, is. Go ahead, Tim.
Well, I was going to say it's also part of this new, what they call law enforcement environmental design, where law enforcement helps design the cities so that they can help curb crime. Like at People's Park, they're trimming down trees so that they can peek through and see who's using drugs and, you know, that sort of thing, and placement of cameras and the use of music or whatever to drive people away. I walked by there last night while they were blasting the classical music and saw more kids there than I've ever seen in my life.
Well, giving them an education, I think it's for commendable activity by the redevelopment agency. But
get a better tape going, though.
Yeah. Well, you know, as I told you, we had this experience about 4 years ago. In 2002, the city was trying to drive away people from what used to be the open planter in front of New Leaf Market. That's where you, Greg, play, and I guess where you distribute food, Tim. They used to have an open planter area, and people who patronized the two kiosks, which were at either end of that open planter area, would sit around the kiosk instead of having the special fenced-off area. And then at a quick and dirty city council meeting, I think it might have even been on the consent agenda, they essentially privatized the entire area. And so I set up a table in this before they actually put in the little wall partitions that, you know, now set off tables during the day and say, you can't be here unless you pay money to sit here. Although I got to say, Alfresco's, Marilyn Alfresco's, is very liberal about this. And Kathy Campesino also is, though I think she and Bernardina have been having their difficulties. Bernardina is a homeless woman who takes carries a lot of stuff with her, you know, but, you know, she's a reasonable person. But she's often there. And, So that would have been perfectly legal back in 2002 when this was an open area. But you see, in order to make it a non-open area, they, of course, put up these fences, and they did so with very little public notice. Now, what I was doing was I was getting petitions urging people to boycott the three surrounding businesses, which at that time were Alibaba's Cafe, Sushi Now, and New Leaf Market, who I think were colluding in this effort. Though it may have been in a redevelopment agency scheme, it was still, they were involved. They had to be in agreement with it, I think. Or at least they would not agree to write letters to the city opposing it. So at this time, in order to discourage youth from sitting there, they would come and wash the sidewalk down twice a day, and they would do things like, you know, extra heavy police patrols, such as you used to find in front of Borders. And they would also come in with loud, piped-in classical music from the speakers right above New Leaf Market, directly emanating from the Downtown Information Center, which, of course, those in the know call the Downtown Informant Center, right next to the Del Mar Theater, which is where the little hosts and their police pals all kind of hang out. And
I find it interesting that they think classical music is going to drive people away versus...
It might have even been opera,
music.
You know, I don't remember exactly, but I remember that it was so loud one day. I was at a table getting petitions urging people to commit themselves to boycotting these businesses, and that I was having trouble, you know, talking to people. And in fact, a woman from Cottontails came across the street. That's the store directly across the street. She said, "What?" She said to me, "What is all this noise?" And I said, "That's, you know, the latest attempt to cleanse the area of undesirable young people here who are, you know, littering the streets of Santa Cruz with their presence, you know." And she gave a helpless gesture and walked back to her place. So I walked over to the hosts, called the police, and filed a complaint against them for unreasonable noise.
We have a call.
And I have a call. I'll tell you the disposition of that complaint as soon as we talk to the caller. Hi there, caller. You're on free radio.
Yeah. I wanted to comment on the music part being piped in. I seem to recall that same time, or maybe a few years earlier, I can't remember the year, music also crossed from the Cinema 9 along there. And I remember it being so distorted and loud that they were ruining their chances of getting people to stay or come, you know, to shop or anything. It was just annoying. That's all I want to say.
Yeah. Thanks, Coral. I know you're doing some music yourself on the streets.
I think she hung up.
And art.
Oh.
And art.
Yeah, they were tabling in front of the Information
music and art.
So what kind of art are, you know, I'm interested in this because I know, you know, your friend Mike True, who is a musician, was, you know, showing his art, his CDs, his music art, his musical work, and he was arrested by Sergeant Butchie Baker.
Oh, yeah.
You know, way back in 2001 or 2000. And he actually won a court case and a significant financial settlement from the city because of this false arrest. And there was an agreement, although it wasn't widely publicized, that, you know, you can't arrest someone for displaying their own artwork on the street, much as the merchants would like to have us assume that only you can only buy in their shops, you know.
Yeah, that was the rhetoric we got on Sunday when Jade and I were downtown with art that she was promoting for a show coming up this Saturday also. And she showed him her permit, her seller's permit. A lot of stuff, but he was right there as soon as we
he was
got
who?
There. The holiday host.
The holiday host.
At the DIC Center.
Informant Center. Huh? And how long were you two there? What kind of artwork were you displaying?
I brought some of my silk-framed artwork and some feathers that I beaded and jewelry. And Jay brought her medicine bags, which are just a few of the things that she makes, you know, leather crafts and all.
So did she have a specific permit enabling her or specifying that particular location?
It didn't apply to that area.
But you were not, how long were you, did you continue
we had
displaying
a,
your stuff? We
had a leisurely time there. We kept hoping that the office would close. It was right there and open. And we stayed from around 3 p.m. till 8 p.m.
And were you able to sell any of your artwork, or did you get donations?
No, I'm not supposed to say.
Oh, it's a secret.
It was donation-based.
Well, did you get much donation?
Yeah, proportionately, I broke the ice, yeah.
Okay, well, you know, we're going to be sending a couple of officers down there to make sure you're not ripping off the poor merchants, you know.
Yeah, they were rushing out. Looking at our work,
did they buy or donate for any of your work?
Did they?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. The they that I'm talking about. No, they didn't.
Oh, the merchants were uninterested. Well, you know, I think a little tit for tat would be nice with all these fine downtown merchants. I mean, why not, you know, kind of sauce for the goose, sauce for the gander, scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Let's get saucy. I'll take a gander.
I would. If I could.
Yeah. Well, let us know how this continues to play out, and we will, of course, make sure that this doesn't happen again so that our streets aren't polluted with your kind.
All right. And do you remember that what I'm talking about, the music down the street farther in Pacific a few years ago being really loud and distorted?
You mean music from a speaker indoor?
At the new theater.
At the Del Mar, at the Cinema 9? No, it couldn't have been the Cinema 9.
It was across from there, and I don't remember which store.
I don't remember that, no, but I mean, my memory is notoriously religious or holy, as some would say. Full of
words. All right. Well.
Hey, bring your music and art to the Monday night on the 18th feeding. It's going to be quite the best.
That's Monday in front of New Leaf Market at 6 o'clock.
I'd like to, yeah.
At 6
I'd
o'clock,
like to.
Yeah. We're going to have a huge meal, socks, and blanket giveaway, and we like some musicians to show up and art.
So you were harassed by the hosts at this Sunday event, but only on one occasion. Then they backed off, or
you're speaking to me. Yeah, the one of the hosts was the heaviest. Then there was a change of shift, and we thought, oh no, somebody else is going to come out. But what he ended up doing was giving us this hard line at first. Then about a half hour later or so, he said, oh, by the way, here I want you to see this Street Performers Guideline brochure.
Right. You know, it's interesting. I mean, we had this discussion. I played this discussion. Actually, Tom Levitt played this discussion on Sunday, a discussion between Bubble Man Tom Noddy and former council member Scott Kennedy, at which it became Tom pointed out that the hosts were originally empowered and, in fact, I don't know if they were required, but they were supposed to be the people who would give out the downtown street performers guidelines, which at that time were voluntary. Now there are no voluntary guidelines. There is only mandatory Ed Porter, you know, guidelines, which are essentially punitive and are basically based on legal use of force and citations. You have to move along every hour. that sort of thing, instead of being a kind of a consensual thing that if somebody really asks you to move along, well, you'll agree to it, you know, unless there's some other problem, which worked fine for 22 years. Anyway,
it was given in the spirit of thinking that it's supposed to be voluntary, right? But I do believe it was the not voluntary guideline.
Well, it's interesting that they didn't enforce against you a demand for a commercial permit or a demand that you move along every hour, because you were there, you say, from 3 to 8.
They did refer to the possibility that could happen.
Right, but they didn't. They may have threatened you, but did police officers walk by at any point?
There was one car that drove by, and
So apparently they're a little nervous about. I think it may be the policy of the police department now, and I'm not sure. Maybe I can get the inside scoop from one of the cops that they're not doing this unless they actually get a complaint.
Right.
Now, did anybody say that they complained about you?
No.
Okay, well, that's probably the reason you weren't told to move along, because they're told to lay off unless there's a complaint.
And who's telling them to lay off now?
What? I'm sorry, what are you saying, Coral? I'm getting some static from some character in the corner. Go ahead.
is the new practice to not enforce it unless there's a complaint, and they're telling the host to not enforce it or not call the police unless they get a complaint?
Well, that's what my suspicion is, but I don't have any real inside information on it, so I can't really say. And perhaps Greg has something to say about that if he has some information, or perhaps he was simply making an attention-getting comment. Greg?
Yeah, another mic over there work.
Go over there and check it out.
I'm too slow.
So, Greg, what's your comment here?
Oh, man, she was well protected because she had the musicians there playing too, you know.
Ah.
It was a nice scene. So they just decided to leave her alone.
I see. So the motto is, if you're going to display your artwork, bring along a musician. Not a bad idea. I don't know about a guy in a jester's hat giving out food, as Tenderfoot Tim here will be doing. He's wearing this very jangly jester's hat that's red and green and has jingle bells on it. And the man looks like some kind of a clown. But I'm not even going to get into it. Thank you, Coral, for calling in. Anything else you want to say?
Have a holly jolly something. And good night.
Something.
Right.
I like that.
Have a festive bye-bye-bye season. And by the way, there is I believe not only is there snowish activities going on downtown for the kiddies until maybe even until 8 o'clock, there will be snow on the street.
If you've got kids
in front of not the Del Mar, but the Cinema 9 Theater at Cooper and Pacific. But I believe the anti-Christmas carolers are going to be out there caroling as well. So if you want to check out carolers in front of the Gap and thereabouts under Art and Revolution, I believe that's happening even as I speak. So, you know, carols like, you know, God rest ye merry gentlemen, but not in Santa Cruz. Mayor Riley has a sleeping band. She'll sight you if you snooze. And if you're warm beneath your coat, your blankets you shall lose. And it's a very, you know,
very
this
good,
is the
Robert.
Season,
very
but,
good.
I have a sort of a certain talents I haven't really explored. So you can catch some of those carols downtown. And while you're catching them, I will wait for your phone calls, 427-3772, and I will play a little bit more from our fine taped interviews.
They want you to be a bigger asshole than the city council.
Right.
No one is a bigger... Well, I won't even get into that at this time.
I mean, the truth is the truth, though. You know what I'm saying? They don't really do nothing for us. Why should we do something there?
It's to help the merchants and their businesses. You wouldn't want the merchants to be offended with you, would you?
These kinds of questionable comments about... I want to remind listeners that I was talking about why are people forced to sit on the sidewalk and perform rather than, let's say, perform from a bench, and I made some comment about a sphincter muscle training, and I don't really think the city council should be generally described as assholes, but I would say that on occasion one becomes, should we say, infuriated with their willingness to allow homeless people to freeze and be sleep punished for sleeping in the winter. It does sometimes grate on one's nerves, so there.
They ain't giving no money.
A practical answer. We've been talking with
Brian.
And
Sister One Dime.
Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you very much.
Say that again. We're talking with
Brian.
Go ahead, Brian. You're going to say.
Your name Brian, too?
Yeah.
I'm Brian. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. I enjoy this downtown. I think it should remain. I like it very much to have music downtown on the street when I walk. People can sit and talk, you know, play music on the streets. I think that should be allowed.
And that's what?
I don't think it affects business at all unless things go on besides playing music because, you know, things get out of hand. But as far as this is just peaceful drum playing. Of course, people playing guitar. Or, you know, that should be allowed, I believe.
Where are you from, Ryan?
Yeah, I'm here.
You're a local Santa Cruzan?
Yeah.
Well, you know, over the years, things have become increasingly repressive on Pacific Avenue. More and more rules. And it becomes really fully a matter of police discretion. So what he's doing is legal.
Yeah.
What she's doing isn't legal. But anybody... She's on a bench. She's not. The public bench, but the point is that any merchant who wants to stop people from drumming can come out and make a complaint, and even if it's not unreasonable noise, though it is getting louder, I've got to admit, they will take the merchant's side in that issue, which is a real pity, because I agree with you. I think music is an important part of Pacific Avenue.
Yeah.
We've been talking with
Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you. Your name?
Stop by to say hello. I still see suspicion in your eyes. Here we go again. Ask me where I've been.
And it's around 7:35 on Tuesday, November 28th. City Council is in session, engaging in the coronation of Recycle Council members Rodkin and Matthews and new council member Lynn Robinson. I am walking to council and checking out the feeding in front of New Leaf Market. The piece through music, Huff guitarist. What's your name, madam?
Hey, it's Valerie.
And who's this?
Yeah, George, Rockin' George.
And who's this man with a guitar over here?
He can't hear real well.
What's your name?
Joseph.
Joseph is playing guitar. So why aren't you three at City Council congratulating Mike Rodkin for being reelected? Oh, for heaven's sake. Is this likely to be a regular Tuesday night event? Or?
Well, I had some good news. It turned out nobody feeds on this night, and a lot of people were thanking me very much for the food tonight. It's a Tuesday night. Turned out that there's very little food, and I had hot macaroni and cheese on a cold night and hot cocoa. So people were thanking me very much for it, which is a really good sign.
Cool. Now, is this an event to which all musicians are invited, or is this sort of a separate group, or what is this about? Is this kind of you just doing some playing yourself?
Well, I was going to connect with some musician friends of mine that I talked to who said that they were very intimidated by the musicians on Wednesday night, particularly one that I was having difficulty with last Wednesday. And I decided that I would get together with them because I've been playing on the street with them. And I decided that I'd get together with them and maybe do some different music since they felt like they were really kind of pushed out, not welcomed enough to be able to play.
I see. So it's music on the streets, perhaps a division of labor, but more music rather than less.
Oh, of course. Why not?
That's good.
Street musicians are good. I mean,
I have to agree. I wish I were one. All right, well, I'm off to City Council.
Hey,
there is a sign here that says, Chow Down, tonight, Tuesday, free drinks and desserts, City Council, Robinson Matthews City Council, the right to sleep is a human right, and the annual taxpayer-supported, not just for the rich, Chow Down at the Civic Auditorium. I guess this is the annual event, or the lesson happening last year, actually. So, Chow Down at the City Council, 8 o'clock, come on down, get... And that man shouting on the street there is me, of course. This actually happened, I guess, about a week, 8 days ago, 9 days ago, at the city council meeting where they elected Emily Riley mayor and Ryan Coonerty vice mayor. Then they went across the street to the Civic Auditorium where people got to eat little pastries and have little
have punch and kind of hobnob with each other. And I thought it would be useful to have homeless people come check it out. And we had about 10 or 15 homeless people. I guess Valerie Christie at this Tuesday event put up a sign that talked about that, a flyer that talked about that. And you're going to now hear some interviews from that particular meeting of the politically well-connected and famous council members. I think Neil Coonerty, supervisor, gets interviewed. We may not have time to go through most of this. And I want to just say right now that before we get into this, earlier today there was a protest at the Vets Hall against, the encroachment of non-vet commercial activities in the Vets Hall on vet space in violation, they believe, of the court order given out by Judge Black some years ago that essentially allowed the Vets Hall to be the domain of veterans and to be used for veterans who are coming back from Iraq in increasing numbers, wounded, disabled, and so forth, though not, of course, the numbers that we had during the Vietnam War, but still. And the problem has to do with, I guess, we've heard complaints on the air about manager Tim Bratton. There was a sign out front talking about Pat Clark, who I guess is one of the key members of the board of trustees or board of directors. And I guess you and I, Tim, both went down there to talk about it. And I did some interviewing. I'm going to play some of those tapes on Sunday, and I believe they were going to have a march. They were asking that they at least be given the use of the basement or vet's bunker. And this is also important, I guess, for such matters as the Potter's Hand meal, which we've talked about. Dennis Adams, who was feeding 150 to 200 people, has not, for the last 3 weeks, been able to do that. He'd previously done it, well, initially on Pacific Avenue in front of Gelato Mania, and then he was driven away from there, and he fed in the Loudon Nelson Center until they closed it on Sundays, and apparently they've reopened it, but he hasn't been able to get back in there, or I'm not sure what the
kitchen's closed, but they're doing yoga classes and stuff like that in there.
Yoga seems to be taking over everywhere.
Yoga's taking over everything.
I mean, we actually went by the Veterans Hall, and there were 5 advertisements for separate yoga classes. I mean,
I specifically heard that it was wanting more karate classes was one of the reasons that they got rid of Potter's Hand. They're wanting to rent
at Loudon Nelson or at Veterans Hall?
At the Veterans Hall.
Well, so the concerns of the protesters today in front of the Vets Hall, which included Ruben Gomez, who's longtime vet organizer and activist, particularly active in the 80s around the Iran-Contra gate and, you know, active in supporting a Nicaraguan the struggle for, in support of the government down there, I think. If my memory serves me correctly, that was a politically correct struggle in Santa Cruz, which a lot of lefty activists supported, while at the same time they weren't supporting homeless people. But I think Ruben also supported homeless vets. There have been problems around the Vets Hall ranging from arrests of homeless veterans for sleeping there to the driving out of meals that serve homeless veterans by this group, the Potter's Hand, that were driven out into the parking lot, and then they were told they served there, they'd be arrested for trespass and driven to San Lorenzo Park, where they used the barbecue pits after having asked permission to do so and made the appropriate inquiries in the city. But then they were suddenly told they couldn't do that after serving there for, I guess, 8 or 9 weeks. And then they moved to Grand Avenue Park, where they cooked without barbecues, but then they were told they couldn't do that because the neighbors were afraid because homeless people lingered in the area. All this kind of fits in very nicely with the increased repressive powers being given to Danette Shoemaker to declare any closing hours on any parks and recreation maintained property in the city, which includes the City Hall grounds. The new no smoking in any park law that's apparently gone up. I thought it was just San Lorenzo Park as a pilot project, but now apparently it's everywhere. And that was done without a public hearing, I think. That was done simply by executive order by Danette Shoemaker, who now does not have to go to the Parks and Rec Commission to get their approval. She just makes all these decisions herself in the privacy of her own star chamber. And anyway, what enraged me when I talked with Dennis Adams last night, or perhaps it was the night before last, was that he was being essentially told, he would not be, they were threatening to Well, they were threatening his constituents, the people he's trying to serve, the people who don't have food on that Sunday morning, and the 150 to 200 of them, poor people, and that, you know, he might... What his concern was not so much that he would be hassled, but that they would be hassled. And indeed, we saw this whole process happen back in 1988-89, when it began as a series of attacks on homeless activists who would come to city council to demand the end of the sleeping ban. They would provide food for people, which drew people there. And, of course, the authorities didn't like that, so they went after the food servers. And then it became a whole pogrom, a massive. They got an injunction against us in 1989. We were a group then called Soup Without a Permit, SWAP. And dozens of people were arrested. One woman was sent to jail, Sandra Loringer, for 30 days. It was a 45-day jail sentence, prompting the famous song, 30 days in the county jail, hold my calls, hold my mail, serving soup, that was my crime. And it's a song by Mark Levy. Now instead of serving soup, I'm serving time.
The most musical I have ever heard you, Robert.
I'm just, you know, I'm full of tunes. I think it must be you guys in the studio. You music men are getting me, you know. 76 citations led the big parade. It's hard to...
I have to say that I credit all those people. You know, I credit those people that got arrested.
I was one of them.
As well as you.
Yeah.
For enabling me to get away with what I get away with every Monday. Because I do not have a permit, and I will not get a permit. I refuse to do so, and so far I've been harassed, and the reason for that is for the people who got arrested before me.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, some people think, well, what's the problem with getting a permit? And the answer, well, there's a couple of answers. Some believe that it's a basic right, you shouldn't have to go through a bureaucracy, that it's, you know, that it's a way of intimidating people from doing what they would naturally do, sharing food with each other. Yeah. Others know that in, for example, San Francisco, Food Not Bombs actually, under Keith McHenry, Katzenjammer Keith, as I used to call him, actually tried to get permits, and they got even more screwed up trying to get permits because they would change the rules, they withdrew the entire permit process. I finally went to jail for 23 days in San Francisco when I was convicted of serving food in violation of their... Food Not Bombs was enjoined from serving free food, and it was also enjoined, as was SWAP, from serving free food in Santa Cruz. We ignored the injunction, and we continued to feed every day. And as you can see, as you do, and as happens, you know, with SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, and as the Potter's Hand says it's going to do on Sunday at 10 o'clock. Now, they're going to go first to the Veterans Hall, I'm told, Dennis Adams tells me. And if the Veterans Hall does not allow them to use the bathrooms as a part of their meal, apparently they feel that homeless people should provide their own porta-potties or possibly colostomy bags. I'm not sure what it is they expect homeless. Chamber pots? I don't know. There has been this apparent... Dennis Adams gave me this incredible description of how the kind of subhuman treatment homeless people were getting at the Vets Hall, even though he said homeless people themselves were quite fastidious about cleaning up the mess that people who are, you know, the riotous Saturday and Friday night carousers, I don't think they're the yoga people, but there are some other, you know, other groups, would make a mess, and the homeless people who came in on Sunday would clean it up along with their own stuff. But that wasn't good enough for the Vets Hall people, and so they were driven out of there. And now they're going to go back and say, let us in, and if you don't let us in, we'll move to San Lorenzo Park, which may involve serving in the rain, possibly under a tent. And I want to tell you that Free Radio Santa Cruz, I'm hoping, will be there. I'll be in the studio on Sunday between 9:30 and 1, but hopefully we'll have some able reporter with a cell phone calling into the studio and giving us an up-to-date bite-by-bite account of what the scene is there. And maybe the city has bit off more than it can chew in trying to harass people who are serving other people free food. Tim?
I think it's ridiculous. And I've watched, you know, years and years and years ago, there was a whole restaurant at being run by the Vets to serve vets and homeless vets. And I watched, you know, lived here my whole life, except for a hiatus when I lived in Hawaii for a while, but I've watched the Vets Hall slowly and now very quickly change from being a hall for the vets to being a privatized, rented out.
It's a yuppie free enterprise zone.
Yuppie free enterprise zone where they're just taking away more and more and more and more rights of the homeless and stuff that's being provided to the homeless. You know, Dennis Adams, like I said, also holds services for homeless people who die, was holding them at the vets hall, and I'm wondering if they're also going to stop allowing us to hold services for homeless people who die.
Well, first things first, what about that karate class?
Yeah, well, if the death, you know, happens to happen at the same time as the karate class, I guess, you know, the karate class will probably win.
Well, you know, you gotta spend money to make money. This is America. And vets are fine, but all in their place, particularly homeless vets. You know, they've seen their day, they've done their thing, thank you very much, and move on, preferably out of the county. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. In the studio with me, Tim and Greg, and not many other people on them phone lines, 427-3772. If I've missed you, I apologize, because I've been keeping a very close eye, but I think Tim has been keeping a weather eye on the phone line blinker, so to speak. We only have about 7 minutes left in the show, so I'm going to do a little shift quickly to the Iraqi war, our favorite war, you know, the war that is now going to be talked to death by the Democrats. It won't be talked to death. People will die while the Democrats talk about the war without doing anything about it, and, of course, we will have our little symbolic Friday demonstrations and do even less. Hopefully that won't happen. Hopefully there'll be all kinds of new stuff coming up. There is a Human Rights Day coming up. I like that. Human Rights Day on Sunday. There's going to be some protests. Might be rained out. Rain's due tomorrow and over the weekend. So a lot of stuff is likely to get rained out. I also want to give a quick update on the two letters that were sent to the mayor and vice mayor. I sent a letter to Emily Riley asking her to fulfill her commitments that she made 6 years ago to discuss and deal with the sleeping ban. I also followed up with two phone calls. I have not heard a word from her. And I will be calling her right now on the phone to ask her again if possibly she can...
She even fasted, right, against the sleeping ban, is that correct?
Yes, she did. She did one, part of the, we call the rolling fast that... that David Silva did. I'm going to call her off air. I don't want to actually waste your time and my time with this. It's going to be futile, but I will do it anyway. Ryan Coonerty, who gave us the famous criminal to read your book in a car for more than 15 minutes in a parking lot, even when you're paying to pay to be in that parking garage, I should say. He was also sent a letter, a different letter, which requested to know what the city's policy is on the sleeping ban in terms of the Jones decision in Los Angeles, which has the cities of Los Angeles and San Diego saying, yes, you can sleep because we're afraid you're going to kick our asses in court. But apparently John Barisoni, our city attorney, knows better. And so does Ryan Coonerty, the civil liberties expert. I have to also say I've heard nothing from Don Zimmerman and the great local ACLU, on whose board of directors sits Mike Riot Act Rotkin, as I used to call him when he had people arrested at city council, and I was only one of those that he arrested, none of whom have ever convicted of any crime that I'm aware of, just simply removed from the public discourse when he exercised his power. Anyway, no response from Ryan Coonerty in a letter sent by Huff and Becky Johnson requesting to know, is it your policy that homeless people can continue to be arrested at night in spite of the Jones decision, in spite of the fact that they're sheltered tonight for less than 160 of 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people, and it's freezing cold outside? Is that the reality of what you're doing? Clarify it for us, please. And, of course, we have the golden silence, hovering over the land, and nothing is happening on that score.
People should also be aware, you know, the most horrible part of the sleeping ban, I think, or the most ridiculous part, is the fact that it makes it illegal to sleep at night and legal to sleep in the daytime, which makes zero sense at all, and even makes it more of a cruel ordinance. Nobody can do that. No homeless person is going to sleep all day and walk around in the middle of the night freezing, contemplating.
Right. Well, obviously that was done in order to avoid a legal challenge because they did in fact
say
the law was the law was challenged by Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins, as we called him, back in 1996, not as an individual case, but for 8.5 months, he and dozens of people vigiled in front of City Hall every night. In fact, they generally stayed awake. These were the times when then-Sergeant, now-Lieutenant Callous Heart Clark, as I now dub him, used to go in and he would take blankets from people as evidence in the middle of the night, intending, of course, to drive away the protest. And, you know, it was asked of him, why are you taking blankets? You can take photos. I mean, it's illegal to have a blanket, wrapping up with a blanket after 11 o'clock at night under the city's blanket ban provision of the camping ordinance. And he was charging them with that. And so you don't have to take their blankets. You can, you can leave their blankets and take pictures. And he said, why are you doing it? And he said, because I can. We have a caller. It's time to make sure these people can't do that. Hi, you're on Free Radio with me and two others. Hello? Well, you were on Free Radio. You can call back, but you better call fast because we've got 2 minutes on the show. In fact, I think it's time for me to wind down the show because coming down the bunny trail will be Uncle Dennis from the cream to the dregs. He's a man who'll be whining and dining you with many a tune from the 60s and... he'll be doing so in a much more sophisticated and melodious manner, in spite of my fine musical appearance, than I could ever do. So I want to thank you, Tim, for hanging tough. Thank you, Greg, for being in the studio. Come back, folks, if you want to catch a live coverage of how Dennis Adams fares. Maybe things will go fine. He'll be able to feed people on Sunday. Maybe he will face opposition. We'll see what happens. If he is facing opposition, hopefully some of us will be there to stand with him and certainly to report to you what's going on. Tim, any comments before we sign off here?
No, let's end the sleeping ban. People need to start demanding it. People need to start protesting. We can't just ask. We have to demand.
You're on Free Radio. Got a comment?
Yeah, about Rodkin.
Yeah.
When you go, because I've lived in 40 cities and I've worked for all four levels of government and talked to every council in California nearly, it feels like.
Oh, nice.
What Rodkin does, and he needs to get aware of this, he talks to the people like they were 19-year-old students. It's like he's teaching a class. It's like, buddy, we've probably got more experience than you do because you never left Santa Cruz after you got here in 72. And don't lecture. Listen, the job of a politician is listen, not lecture. So if he straightens that out, then I think he'll get a little more smooth.
Thank you, Madison.
Bye.
And that's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides tonight. Come back again if you'd like on Sunday morning. I'll be around. Might be earlier than 9:30, but I'll be here by 9:30, and we can do some chatting about the people who've frozen in the last 4 days and at night and or last 3 days, and we'll get back to you at that time. Let's go out on a little music here. A little music from you, Tim. This actually is something you yourself have devised.
An old band of mine from 2002, Do Track 2. This is not me singing, but a song of mine. Song of ours, I should say.
Fair enough. And I think we have track 2.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're at 101.1 FM. We're also at www.freakradio.org. I'm Uncle Dennis. My pleasure to be in here for the next 3 hours. The show's called From the Cream to the Dregs. And we just heard the Dregs, so we'll have to hear the Cream sometime later on. But do stay tuned for lots of music from the 60s and 70s. We'll have the Earth First update around 9 o'clock, and we'll get right back to music after that. Stay tuned.
Go ahead and have a good time, huh?